shake, 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 Sinora, shake your body line. Shake, 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 Sinora, shake it all the time. Work, 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 Sinora,
oh, Harry.
Work your body line.
Hi. You are listening to the voice of Vashon, 101.9 in downtown Vashon, Washington. I'm Linda Nygaard. The show is called The Clatch. And with me in the studio today are three wonderful women. Susan McCabe is going to be our engineer today.
Hello.
Hi. And we have Margaret Rancone.
Hello, Linda.
Hi. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
I'm so glad you're here. And we have Lanera Lucas.
Hi.
Hi, Lanera. Both of these women are poets, published poets, and in their own way, well, they're not famous and wealthy poets, but they're poets, wonderful poets from Vashon Island. And we're going to talk to them later in the hour because this is Poetry Month.
I don't think there are any famous and wealthy poets, honestly.
I know. I always say that tongue in cheek, you know, like you're a famous wealthy
Billy Collins.
Billy Collins.
Yeah.
He's one of my favorites. Anyway, so as you probably noticed, we were listening to Harry Belafonte at the introduction music, and we were just talking, sitting here in the studio waiting for it to be 3 o'clock, about what a wonderful man Harry was. Mm. And he passed away recently, and we mourn his loss. Susan, do you know a little bit about Harry?
Well, I've just been studying on him, studying on him today because of his death. And the guy was an artist, an activist, a friend of Martin Luther King. His best friend was Sidney Poitier. They were people who were committed to justice and to racial justice, and they put a lot of their star power into making that work.
They did more than their mouth, you know. It was heart and soul,
right?
And
he
activism.
He put a lot of his fortune.
Mm-hmm.
He did really well financially. The guy dropped out of high school.
Wow.
He grew up in poverty in Harlem. He found his voice and made the most of it throughout his life.
Mm.
And he carried with him his Jamaican immigrant mother, who worked as a domestic, and came home one night after having a hard time finding work, sobbing, and said to him, "Don't ever let injustice go. Always stand up for justice." And he carried that through his life.
He really did. He really did. I didn't realize he was in his 90s. I knew he was getting older, but I didn't realize.
96.
Yeah. And the world is experiencing a loss for his leaving us at this time, I think. So, you know, crank up your Harry Belafonte today. We were dancing in the studio before we got on, kind of, you know, chair dancing.
Yeah.
It was fun. Let's see, what are we talking about here? Well, I'd like to talk a little bit. Well, first of all, we have to do our COVID check-in. We always do that.
Yes.
And I don't know any news except that people who had it, I knew last time we were on the air, I was explaining that I knew three people who had it, and the three people who had it are now okay. So,
you say they're now dead.
Yeah, no. They're okay. It wasn't pleasant, but two of them had been vaccinated and one of them hadn't. And the one who had not been vaccinated was very, very, very ill for 3 weeks. The other two had about a week of discomfort and, you know, they weren't that sick. But there's also drugs now to help you when you actually catch it. So I don't really know any more about COVID.
Well, there's a new booster out.
Oh, right. Forgot about that. For old people?
For old people like me.
Like
over 65 and those who are immunocompromised.
Yes, yes. I know.
Wonderful.
Well, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk about today, look at the spring weather we have today for the first time in I don't know how long it's been since we've seen the sun.
We should take this studio outside.
I know. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
It's beautiful out there. And we are, I wanted to talk about different ways of celebrating spring and what it means to, what was that? Oh, okay. Never mind. You know, we've come out of our winter doldrums, I think, a little bit, or at least trying to, with all the gray and the clouds and the rain. And now we have spring. And even though we're past the spring equinox, I thought it would be interesting to just learn a little bit about how other people celebrate spring and what they do. You know, different cultures spend spring in a different way. The reason that I got enthralled with it all was I have a friend whose name is Sally Butcher, and she lives in London, and she's Persian. Her husband is Persian. So she, by osmosis, is Persian and practices all of his practice, you know? Anyway, she was preparing for Nowruz, N-O-W-R-U-Z, mm-hmm. which is springtime ritual.
In Persia?
In Persia. And it's an ancient, ancient ritual. There's all kinds of things they do. They have a big table, and they have all kinds of food on that table that all represent different things. But what I came away from it with was her description of what she had done with grass. And part of their springtime ritual is planting wheatgrass in a bowl, and you nurture it. You nurture the seeds. You let them. You put a little cloth over them so they germinate. And then, you know, in a couple of days, you take the cloth out. And this is all part of the ritual of getting ready for spring. And then when the little sprouts turn into grass, of course, you water it. And you have a little grass thing in a bowl that sits on the table. You water it and tend it and take care of it. And, of course, it represents new life, green. We're coming to the spring. And then you have a feast. And I just love that green grass thing, and I'm going to do it next year. And I thought, why am I going to wait till next year? I can celebrate spring any day I want to.
Well, and you know, a lot of people celebrate a different kind of grass on 420.
And that is in the springtime.
That is in the springtime.
You know,
yes. And they may be planting little plots.
There might be little seeds involved in that. There just might be little seeds involved. Mm-hmm. You know, Dexter over at Euphorium, the pot store in Vashon, had a 420 celebration over there. And he Aggie's farm catered. And he just had a big celebration in the back of the parking lot, and you just could go eat your face off and, you know, go in the store if you wanted to. But I thought it was a really wonderful.
Go get the munchies.
Go get the munchies.
And enjoy the
Go
Aggies.
To the store and yes. then go to Aggie's. Yeah. Yes, so right. I understand it was quite a success, and they were very busy all day. So so back to
the spring celebrations.
Egypt. Let's talk about Egypt. They celebrate Sham El Nassim. It's a spring festival, and it's right after Easter. So, you know, it's not going to happen now, but it's very interesting. The title of the celebration translates to smelling the breeze. Mm. And it acknowledges the coming harvest and the change in the spring air. So the spring is reminding them of the planting and the resultant harvest later on. And they decorate. I love this. They decorate eggs by painting their wishes on them.
Oh, cool.
I really loved. And of course, you know, the eggs symbolize rebirth. And then they hang these baskets of eggs outside of their homes, hoping that their wishes get fulfilled.
So nice.
I think that's a pretty nice one, too.
I found Holi, which is a Hindu
celebration. Yeah.
And that's where they splash colored paints all over each other.
I've seen pictures of that.
And it looks like such fun.
I would love to do that.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, somewhere in China and Japan, they sprinkle water on each other that, you know, symbolizes growth and cleanliness and newness. One of the things I learned by just doing a little research is about our native Salish. And rather than tell you about it, I'm going to read you two sentences that they write. At equinox, we stand between frenzy and rest, and we find our way back into calming our core to meet life in balance. They talk about meditating in the forest, walking, gratitude. And then the other quote is, in every breath, there is a beautiful moment of balance. We stand between frenzy and rest, and we find our way back.
That sounds lovely.
Isn't that?
That sounds lovely. And one of the ones you mentioned was smelling the breeze.
Mm-hmm.
And I think spring has a distinct smell.
Absolutely.
Well, and it's kind of like poop.
It's the mud.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. The mud is coming to life. Mm-hmm. There's a definite poop smell
I'm going to have to go.
Along with the flowers. But
yeah. I don't ever smell spring as much as I smell autumn. I can tell. In August, there's always a day. There's one day when it's like, oh, I just smelled autumn. I know what's coming.
What does autumn smell like?
I don't know how to describe it. It's a sultry kind of sultry and sharp. There's a sharpness to it.
Huh.
Just smell it. Huh. You can smell it. If I smell it next time, I'll call you.
Call me.
I'll say step outside.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Go take a deep breath.
Yeah.
Yes.
Poland. Let's talk about Poland. So, you know, they're fairly Catholic now. But they still have a lot of pagan traditions. And one of the most bizarre and eyebrow-raising is called the Drowning of Marzana. And she's the Slavic goddess of plague, death, and winter. And so they do this really big celebration where the whole village, the whole town, the kids, the grandparents, everybody joins in fashioning these either paper mache or whatever they want. Of the witch, of the winter witch. They make dolls. And then, fearing her icy grasp, the best way for superstitious Slavs to protect themselves is to encourage the timely arrival of spring and to ensure a good harvest. So what they do, this is pretty brutal, but what they do is they drown her. They throw her in the river and drown her and watch her float away. And then somebody else gets her and they burn her. No, they burn her first.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not going to work when she's wet.
No, sorry. They burn her at the stake like they did old witches back in the day, you know, which is sort of hard to imagine that they're still carrying that. But anyway, and then they drown her. And then they resurrect the body out of the water and they put it in the market square. Just, you know, so winter is gone. Period.
Ah, so she represents winter.
Winter, death, and what else did I say? Death and something else, something bad.
Plague.
Plague?
Yes, plague. That was it. So, you know, they're getting rid of all that angst and anger over the dark, long, dark winter. I don't know about burning witches, but, you know.
I could think of a couple other symbols, symbolic people I'd like to burn.
Yeah,
at
I can
the
think
end
of a
winter,
couple.
Or at any time,
or anytime.
Actually, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And then the other one that I really love is Teotihuacan in Mexico. It's about 30 miles outside of Mexico City. I've been there, and it's an incredible pyramid, ancient city. And each year, I mean thousands of people come to that pyramid, and they all dress in white. And they climb those 360 steps to the top where they raise their arms and they offer gratitude and receive the sun. And they soak up the energy for the year. That's what they believe. They stand on top of this pyramid, raise their arms to the sun, and the sun infuses them with energy for the coming year, which I love.
Yeah, that wouldn't work here.
Well, no, it's in Mexico.
No sun.
Not in March.
Not in March.
Or April. Right.
That's for sure not in March. Susan and I have a little spring ritual we're going to do, kind of.
So, oh, yeah.
We're going to go for a little drive tomorrow to Mount Vernon to see the tulips.
Oh, lovely.
And I think that'll be a really nice heading in to spring.
You know, and I heard good things about the cold and its impact on the tulips because it's cold outside, or has been unseasonably cold.
Mm-hmm.
The tulips are lasting longer.
Mm-hmm.
They're not.
Oh, good.
They're not fading as quickly.
Oh,
so,
good.
Yeah. So
it's like being in a refrigerator.
Exactly. Yeah.
Except
in the florist refrigerator.
Right.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. So let's get on to the. Do you have anything else you want to talk about before we get on to the main topic of the day?
Well, I have a hard time not being political, but I'm really glad Tucker Carlson is gone.
Oh man.
I'm really glad that Joe Biden is running again.
I am too.
Although a lot of people are having a meh response to that. I think he's what I'm envisioning is another battle between him and the orange one.
Oh yeah. But now it's sort of up for discussion about whether or not he really can run.
He being the orange one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a question mark.
You know, he'll ignore everything anyway, but.
Well, the pundits say that if he's not the nominee, he will start a third party, which is great. Because,
well, that would be good.
Yeah.
That'd be lovely.
I think that would really work.
Yeah.
For the country.
Yeah.
For the whole country.
I still think we need to have more than two parties in this country, and we're proving the problem with that more and more every year. But the problem I see is that most of the third parties that come up are wackos.
Well, I think even that's beyond right. that, people just need to vote. I don't think we'd need three parties if people voted.
Well, it would sure help.
Yeah.
But I still think we do. I still think we need more three, four, five parties. I think we need to be looking more like a parliament than because right now we're not a democracy.
And today is the last day to vote here on the island. It's
right.
The 25th.
Yes. Good. You brought that up.
Parks District.
Yeah, Parks District.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the other thing I wanted to tell you guys was I read an article in the Seattle Times this morning. I think it was in, Susan said it was in Washington Post too, about mowing your lawn.
Oh, yeah.
And still, you know, now it's spring and so the lawnmowers are coming out and leaf blowers and all that. But they're encouraging people to let their lawns grow longer than usual because it's a place for insects and butterflies.
Exactly.
And what they're recommending, and I live in an apartment, so I don't have a lawn, but I sure can tell you how to do yours.
And my sister used to tell me how to raise my children.
Did she? And she didn't have any kids.
She didn't have any kids, right.
They're saying that you should let it grow at least 6 inches long before you cut it, which I know most people cut it before it's 6 inches long. They cut it when it's like four. And the article says you're supposed to let it grow to 6 inches and then only cut it to four.
That helps.
Let it grow.
It helps the roots.
Right. Yeah, it makes stronger roots. Yeah. So it's healthier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you cut it less, especially now, then the roots have a good chance of developing. You know how everything is so lush and green?
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't, let it.
I didn't know that.
And leave the clippings on the lawn.
Yes.
Let it mulch. To my mind, grass is a stupid idea anyway.
Yeah.
It is.
Because, you know, we grow it. We cut it. We throw it away.
We
water it. We put pesticides on it. That's another bad thing.
That's the other thing they were saying.
Yeah.
Don't stop that right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, great expanses of lawns take up a huge amount of earth where there could be.
And water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Water.
Where there could be crop food growing, right? And it could be done with regenerative agriculture, which requires less water.
Mm-hmm. What the article also said was that if you let your lawn grow, the butterflies will love you forever. And I guess it attracts butterflies, which I didn't know, a lawn. But that makes sense. Well, I would do that. So any other spring fling notices?
I saw the first fritillary. Butterflies. Fritillary.
I didn't know what that is.
They're a little butterfly that's a silvery blue-gray, and they hang around in marshy country lanes. They like mud.
Mm-hmm. They lay a lot of that.
They mate and lay their eggs in mud.
Well, they do. Yeah, see, that's the other thing. It's a place for them to lay their eggs.
Exactly.
To have a home, really.
Yeah.
You know, when I visited Costa Rica a couple times, I learned that butterflies are drunk most of their lives.
Oh.
They drink fermented
juice
from the flowers, and what that does is make their flight pattern so erratic that their predators can't catch them. So butterflies live a short, drunken,
fabulous, ridiculous life,
right?
And they're colorful and beautiful besides.
Yeah, right.
Wow, that's quite
a
life.
There have been some starlets like that.
Amy Winehouse comes to mind.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know who she is.
Wonderful singer.
Wonderful singer, right. Young.
Yeah. Short-lived.
Short-lived.
And died, beautiful.
And
yes.
beautiful, yeah. She was a butterfly.
I did come across a fabulous, I'm assuming it was a spring ritual. Sunday, I was walking in Lincoln Park, and I heard these drums way off in the distance, yeah. as I kept walking, they became closer and closer. Mm-hmm. And there was this amazing circle of, I'm guessing, First Nation people.
Oh.
They had headdresses that mm-hmm. were like 4 feet tall.
Wow.
And they oh. were just magnificent. I was spellbound. Anyway, they did that frenzy quiet mm-hmm. thing. They would mm-hmm. do this dance in a circle with the drums, loud drums, and then quiet for a couple wow. seconds, a couple of minutes mm-hmm. actually. Mm-hmm. And then they repeated that several times.
So that's what we were talking about.
It was what
that's
you were talking
so
about.
You saw it.
I saw it. It was
oh,
amazing.
Oh, Margaret, that's wonderful.
It was amazing.
Yeah. That's something you'll never forget.
Never.
No.
Never.
No. And you can't take a picture of it. You'll never.
No.
You know.
It wouldn't capture.
It wouldn't capture. No. And plus, it's sort of an intrusion.
Exactly.
In what they're doing.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, that's
you know,
lovely.
Our obsession with photographing everything, too,
mm-hmm.
Takes us out of the experience.
It does.
It's
true.
A
it
way
does.
To stay out of the experience if you don't want to involve yourself
right.
in it. But if you want to really feel the experience, to stop and get the right photo angle mm-hmm. or get your phone to work kind of takes you away from what's
it
happening.
It does. I have a friend who takes no photographs, no matter what, and she travels a lot.
Uh-huh.
And she said, you know, I just decided that photographs are stupid. She said, I was there, I remember, and it doesn't matter if you see a picture of where I was. You know? Mm. And that's true, I think. Not for most of us, but...
Well, we like to share the experience.
Look yes. at me, yeah. look at me.
Yeah.
yeah. So, National Poetry Month. I want to let you know who Margaret and Lanera are. Margaret Racone... Is it Racone?
Rancone.
Rancone.
Yeah.
Is it Italian?
An Italian man told me that's
really?
How you pronounce it.
Rancone.
Rancone.
Rancone. I love that. Her poetry has appeared in Chrysanthemum and Goose River Anthology. She's been published in Three Birds Dreaming with two other poets. Her collection of poetry, A Sleeve of Blue, was recently published by Goldfish Press. Her poetry was performed as part of the Pierce College 10-Minute Play Festival. Wow, that's cool. And she was chosen for Seattle City Council's Wordsworth Program. She curated an open mic in Seattle for 10 years, on Vashon Island for 2 years, and was a facilitator for a poetry season series at Chief Seattle Club. She lives on Vashon Island, where she frequently forest walks. She likes to keep inspired, and the forest helps.
It certainly does.
It helps that inspiration. And then we have Lanera. And where's your thing? Na-na-na-na. Do you have it?
I have it.
Okay, you read it.
Lanera Lucas won the Crucible Fiction Prize. Answering Chaos, a Handbook, is her first poetry collection, and it will be published by Kelsey Books in 2024. Here's what she has to say about it. Answering Chaos, a Handbook, is a manual for survival through poetry, a record of how to withstand the necessary and unnecessary traumas of a long life.
Mm.
Although the title is wry, it is also serious. I hope that by being forthright about my many mistakes, the reader will know they are not alone. I hope these poems will find the reader who has been waiting for them. That's
I love
lovely.
That.
Lovely.
Yes. Well, congratulations to both of you for your publishing history and how much of the community you take in your arms. I love that.
You had a great quote here to open the whole discussion of poetry, and it comes from Sigmund Freud.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He said, not I, but the poet discovered the unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there you are.
And there you are. Another one I found, you know, Mukai Gardens is doing their haiku festival now. And our friend Sunny Spidell entered, and she went up there the other day and saw her poems here and there. So that's kind of exciting. But one of haiku that I read by a woman named Jeanette Bouvet. Do you know her? She's from yeah. Seattle. She's yeah. a Seattle poet. She wrote, cherry blossom trees adorned in pink taffeta, debutantes of spring.
Beautiful.
Nice.
Isn't that pretty? Yeah. That's another thing, you know, is the cherry blossoms are so healing for all of us. They're really
yeah,
magnificent this year.
My next door neighbor has a beautiful cherry blossom tree. And when he went on vacation, I felt it needed a trim.
Oh, yeah, it probably did.
Did, and yeah. So I just happened to bring that trim into my entryway in a gigantic vase.
I bet it smelled really good.
It did smell really
good. Yeah, I bet it did.
Before we get into the poems, I would like to express our gratitude to the people who make Voice of Eshon possible.
Thank you.
VOV programming support is provided by Pandora's Box, Vashon Island's provider of quality pet foods at competitive prices. With over 100 years of combined knowledge and experience in pet care and pet nutrition, you'll find Pandora's Box on Vashon Highway, north of the main intersection.
This portion of VOV programming is brought to you by Minglement, Vashon Island's natural marketplace for the conscious consumer, where owners, staff, and customers alike embrace the importance of natural, organic, and non-GMO food and products, along with supplements, tinctures, gifts, bulk teas, spices, and herbs. Find them at Center, where the town of Vashon originated.
Thank you to our underwriters.
Yes, we couldn't do it without you, and we really do appreciate it. Thank you. Let's talk about poetry.
Oh, let's.
Yeah. Let's. So, hang on a minute. I have to move this mic and it's going to make a big noise. There. Okay. Now.
It actually didn't.
It didn't?
You did a good job.
Oh, good. Wow. So, April Poetry Month, does it mean something special to the two of you, or do you have things that you do in regard to Poetry Month?
Actually, this is kind of a funny story. At one of my open mic readings that I had in Seattle, I met Sandra Noel, who's our current poet laureate.
Right.
And she and I agreed to exchange a poem every day. So we
A poem?
A new one.
Oh.
Of ours.
Of
so
yours.
We've been writing a poem a day for almost 10 years.
Oh my gosh.
Oh Lord.
Yes.
Yeah.
So April to me is significant in that it lets the world know that it's Poetry Month, but in terms of writing, I'm writing every day.
Oh, yeah. That's wonderful. That's
wonderful. I can't imagine not writing every day. I didn't really start to write until I was 9 in third grade because I couldn't hold the pen properly until then.
Oh.
But since then, I have been writing, and I realized early on that I like, is that me making that noise?
We don't know where it is.
I haven't quite figured that out, but no, it's not you.
I realized that the kind of writing that I was going to do was not going to feed me, so I better have some kind of a regular job. Because poetry...
You're not going to be famous and wealthy?
Well, there's no money in poetry. The money is all going out.
Go ahead.
Instead of coming in. I'm hesitant to say anything because I don't want that.
No, don't be afraid to say
anything.
No, it's not. No, don't be afraid to say anything. Because there's just something going on here that we're not quite figuring out. Now you shut my mic off.
No, I shut off your headphone. I think the headphones are interfering with the microphones.
Yeah, they were. It was coming from that.
Okay. So can you still hear me?
For
I can hear you.
Okay, good.
For poets,
and so can
every
our listeners.
Day is Poetry Day. There's no day off. I write a poem every day, and I tell myself, I've been doing this for many years, I'll just sit down and write a bad poem today.
Mm-hmm.
And then later when I look, I can't tell the days where I thought, wow, that one was a good one. And the days where I thought, oh, jeepers, but it's only a bad poem. So you know, after a couple of months, I go back and look through the journals and see if there's anything I want to work on more. I'm thrilled that April is National Poetry Month because it brings attention to poetry, which usually we only get when there's a national emergency. Really,
true.
September 11th,
yeah.
Everyone reached for poetry.
That's true.
Terrible situations, because, you know, at a wedding, no one comes up to me and says, oh, I'm getting married, would you read a short story at my family? At least they haven't said that yet.
I never thought of that before.
Yeah. They're both compressed
the tragedy,
forms.
And people look for comfort in poetry.
Well, and it does. I mean, that speaks to poetry's ability to capture feelings in a condensed form. And that's why it's so hard to write a good poem.
Mm-hmm.
How many really good poems do you think you've written, each of you? Do you have some that you just...
I,
go back to?
I'm 74. I've been writing since I was 9.
How many do you think that is?
Yeah, how many do you think? How many poems do you think you've written?
Well, think about Margaret with 10 years of a. I mean, we can do the math there. Somebody can. Well, I can't.
There are some poems that, you know, I read over and go, well, that was pretty good, but. Mm-hmm. It's hard to judge your own poetry.
It is.
You know, it, anyway.
So let's hear some poetry.
Poems, but we knew that.
Let's hear some poetry. Margaret, do you want to read something for us?
I'd love to.
Okay,
thank you.
Tell us a little bit about the poem and how it came about, maybe?
Yes. So the title of this poem is Cherry Blossoms.
Oh.
And when my partner and I, Shelley and I, first moved to Seattle, we rented a lovely little apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And in front of the apartment were these two beautiful cherry trees.
Mm.
And they were tended by the landlord's father, a wonderful Italian man. I wish I could remember his name. He would leave me little gifts on a little cafe table. Anyway, I dedicated this poem to him.
Okay.
Cherry Blossoms. On some mornings, she's a bride, waiting for the streetlight to deliver her groom. In diffused later light, bloodless bloom, hundreds of tight-fisted children clutching white promise, shaped tenderly by weathered Italian hands to be a giant bonsai. Her flat, low crown can be heard rubbing the sky's afternoon belly in delight.
I love that
image. Oh, wow.
Rubbing the sky's afternoon belly.
Yeah. I have goose pimples.
That is wonderful.
That's the essence of poetry. It's not words, it's images. It's whatever lets the mind lift off and embrace that image. And when a poet writes a poem, they just send it out into the world. And when I write stuff or Margaret writes stuff, we don't know how the reader is going to take it.
Right.
Sometimes
right.
they take it very differently. That's not my business.
You know, that's really a good point. I was listening to something the other day, some talk show person, and they were criticizing, discussing another famous person who had said something really off color or wrong or offensive, something offensive. And he thought it was funny when he said it. And so the two people that were talking about it were accomplished performers. And they said, well, you know, freedom of speech, you can say whatever you want to say, but you don't know how it's going to land, which is, you know, kind of how your poetry is.
Yeah.
You can say it, but you don't know how it's going to be interpreted or who's going to like it or not. And it just comes out. That's a beautiful poem. Thank you.
Thank you for that.
You wrote that a long time ago?
I wrote it in 2004.
Okay.
So it's
all right.
One of the oldies.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Well, Lanira, what have you got for us today?
Well, let me just put my reading glasses on here. I'm going to read a poem called Where Was the Best Salmon of My Life? This is not a restaurant review. This is from a book called I Sing the Salmon Home. It's edited by Raina Priest, who is our current poet laureate for another month or so.
Mm-hmm.
And it is all about salmon, and it is tied in with the Writers and Artists Against Extinction and Save Our Wild Salmon and a whole bunch of other kinds of things like that.
And Raina Priest is the Seattle Poet Laureate?
Washington State.
Washington.
She's of the Lummi Tribe.
Oh, yes. I've heard about her. Okay.
Good poet. Where was the best salmon of my life? In Port Chilcoot, 40 years ago, we caught a run of Chinook. I was recently divorced and had flown to old friends in Alaska to be cosseted. There is very little cosseting on a fishing boat or in a fishing family, but they let me come out on the gill netter with them, and later they let me eat as much smoked salmon as I wanted. As much as I wanted was not something I had in my marriage, although I had enough divorce. When I say we caught the fish, my job was to stay out of the way. Out of the way of the roller winding up the net full of shining fish. Out of the way as my friends released the waterfall of fish into the ice hold, slowly enough for two of them to double gaff a big Chinook, hang the fish by its gills and get its weight, 40 pounds. Then we powered back to port. I was allowed to gut the fish and pull out its entrails. I didn't read the entrails like a diviner, and I regret this. At the time, I wanted to get the guts out of something. A dead fish was good enough.
Oh, that's wonderful.
When the flesh was clean and the smoker ready, the salmon went inside to have a hot hibernation. We ate the salmon with lemon. I remember also cabbage slaw, homemade pickles, cinnamon buttermilk pie for dessert.
Mm.
We ate the tender flesh still warm from the smoker, and I loved that salmon as I have never loved another salmon. Wild, fresh, hot, almost melting, as if I had ascended into salmon heaven. No bread or onion or dill, just the tart lemon and the salmon caught by my friends, and I was filled.
Mm.
And
wow.
And I am filled.
That wonderful.
And my mouth is watering.
Yeah, I was getting really hungry.
Yeah.
But I have to ask a really stupid question.
Oh,
you probably all, what's cosseting?
Oh, cosseting is taking tender care of someone. To cosset is to wrap them in cotton wool and love and cherish mm-hmm. them.
Oh, mm-hmm. I love that word.
Cosseting.
Not much of that on a fishing boat.
No, not much on a fishing boat. So most of that is true, except I must confess that the buttermilk pie actually did not have cinnamon in it, because a really good buttermilk pie, in fact, does not need cinnamon, but I needed the sound of something else on that line.
Interesting. Oh, I love that.
I do, too.
Yeah.
So what's in a buttermilk pie?
Well, really good buttermilk and a fabulous crust. And I had in Alaska when I was there 40 years ago. At the little state, that was the state, it must have been the county fair just outside of Haines, Alaska. And that the taste of that buttermilk pie and the really good crust mm-hmm. has stayed with me all these years.
It's mm-hmm. a custard pie then?
It's a custard
yeah,
pie.
That sounds good.
Buttermilk pie.
Man,
it's also, I think the Amish make it.
Mm-hmm.
Other, you know, it's like a yogurt pie. It's got that tang to it.
The key that you said is really good buttermilk. It's not
really
low-fat buttermilk, and it's not the buttermilk. It would be good if you had a dairyman nearby for that kind of buttermilk. Yeah.
You know, Linda is a big foodie, and her other show is Stirring the Pot.
Ah.
And the joke is that we never get out of the clatch without talking about food.
Oh, yeah, and today it's not my fault.
Today it's not your fault?
Yeah.
Wolf, I love that.
Food is comfort.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
To me, that poem means one thing. It means that I went up there after a very difficult divorce, which was quite polite and quite quiet, but quite
painful.
Awful.
Oh, yeah.
But to others, when I read it most recently, a couple Saturdays ago at the big hoop-de-doo at University of Puget Sound, people came up to me and said how much they liked the poem. And I said, did you go through a hideous divorce? And they said, no, but I know what it is to be comforted by friends.
Mm.
And I was really touched by that. Mm-hmm. So you never mm-hmm. know.
You don't.
Mm-hmm. You just put
down. There's a lot more in that poem than salmon.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
There's sex in the poem. Wild, hot, almost melting.
Right. That is sex.
Yes.
When you, either one of you can answer this, when you read poetry, someone else's poetry, do you dissect it? Do you read it first for the pleasure of the word, or do you think about how did he or she come up with that? What is it? Are you more investigatory because you're poets?
I am totally not investigatory when I read someone else's poem.
Uh-huh.
I do it for the pure passion and love that I have for poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't take it any further if it's someone else's poetry. Unless we're in a critique group, that's different.
Right.
But for pleasure, no, mm-hmm. I don't go any further than the love and the passion.
The reason I ask that is because of what we were just saying about that sex. I didn't pick up on that when she read it.
I did.
I got that. It was at the close. But I'm kind of hung up on what do you do in a critique session?
Oh,
what does
a poetry
critique session look
poetry
like?
Poetry critique is Margaret and I were in a group together. You send your poem. You show up together. Small group, large group. I'm in two groups, a small group and a large group. and you read the poem out loud, and everyone has a copy of it. This happens mostly on Zoom these days. Mm-hmm. And then you talk about what's working in the poem first, and then you talk about what's not working. And in the groups that I'm in, most of us are teachers or retired teachers.
Oh, okay.
So back to your earlier comment about how you read, for me it depends, am I reading for pleasure or back in the days, am I reading because I'm going to teach this poem? Okay. Some poems come open to a student, and it depends on whether it's a beginning class, an intermediate, an advanced, or, God help us, a mixed class. Those are the most difficult to teach.
I bet they are. Too many different levels?
Different levels, mm-hmm. and people have different expectations. But in a critique group, if it's working well, if my work has been critiqued, I come away knowing, good, this worked. Various people told me that these two lines here didn't work for them mm-hmm. for different reasons. That tells me, look right at that. But I also pay attention to who's saying what and what their background is and what they have said to me in the past. Mm-hmm. In the large group that I'm in, it's with a lot of poets are pretty high on the food chain. So I tend to really pay attention to what they say, but I also know that they have predispositions for certain
sure.
things. So yes, you do have to then go back and realize, that doesn't work. I got some information. And what I do is just write everything down. I write down everything that everyone says, and I write down who said it. And then I just let it sit, and then I'll go back and look at it a couple of weeks later and go,
that makes sense.
Because even someone who's been just completely right forever can still just be completely wrong on something. Mm-hmm. So as long as it is a respectful group, and there's no reason to ever stay in a group that isn't respectful of your work, word from a retired writing teacher... as long as it's a respectful group, there's stuff to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have to say, when searching for what poems I was bringing today, mm-hmm. I went way back, and so many of my printed poems had Lanera written in the margin.
Oh, that's interesting.
I have to say, Lanera, you were one of the best teachers, mentors I've had.
Oh, thank you, Margaret.
Because I took everything that she wrote down to heart,
mm-hmm.
and she is a great teacher.
That's wonderful. That's teaching now?
No, I retired.
Did you?
I came back, I think it must have been 2018, and I taught something. I just felt like teaching. I didn't want any money for it. So I talked to the library and said, I want to offer something I'm going to call the Open Poetry Group at the library. Anyone can come. But Ann Spires came and sat in with me.
Yeah.
And so it was the two of us, because that was a lively group and all kinds of people showed up. Some were there with other agendas and some were there to just have their work. There was someone who came, I don't want to say anything about what gender they were or anything else, but there's someone who suffers from a lot of mental trouble, whose poetry was wonderful.
Mm.
And when we were talking about poetry, this person was alive and vital and focused on the work. And then the minute the class was over, they just slumped back into...
Wow.
Interesting.
But it's very interesting. Poetry is like music. You know, it goes to different parts of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
It is so much of music.
Mm-hmm. Mm. You know, I come from Chicago, and... I don't know if it's where it started, but poetry slams were big.
Oh, yes.
And that is what I would consider the brutal poetry critique.
Yeah.
But there was a whole genre, if you will, or I don't know if I'd call it genre, style of delivery.
Mm-hmm.
There was a whole style of response, reaction, mm-hmm. and I mean, people were booed off the stage, and it was tough.
I thought it was really fun. They had a huge poetry slam audience and poets in Portland when I lived there. Lived there for 20 years. And I knew one of them whose name was John Dooley. Bless his heart, rest in peace. Wonderful man who was hilarious in his delivery, and his delivery was usually about some pretty ugly things. You know, it was hard stuff to reckon with, but he was able to, you know, scream it at us in a way that felt differently from how the words look on the paper. So I think in that regard, I was going to ask you, in that regard, there's a lot to say about delivery when you're reading.
Yeah.
Do you have training or do you just read like you feel like reading when you read out loud?
I trained as an actor and was a director and founded and ran a theater company in Seattle in the 1970s. So I do have that as an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been reading my own stuff and other people's stuff for many, many years.
It just seems to me, and, you know, I'm not a poet, so I don't know, but it seems to me that good poets, when they're reading their work, have a beautiful cadence with the way that the words flow out of their mouth. Whereas when I read the poem, I don't feel that in a way that when it's delivered live from the person who wrote it.
Well, you may not be understanding exactly what they
exactly,
wanted to say
but
either.
You can so, when you hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of discussion about reading poetry. It has to do with end stops. And there are some people who want to read the poem the way it looks on the page.
Mm-hmm.
That makes me crazy.
I hate that.
I do too.
That's a style of poetry reading that I find incredibly annoying. And it was pretty vogue for a while.
Yeah.
It seems to have slackened off
somewhat. Oh, it's always ready to raise its evil head. And I think it's responsible for people saying, I don't like poetry.
I don't like poetry.
And I don't want to listen to it. Whereas if you just read it for story.
Yes.
And Margaret reads beautifully.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I could listen to you all day.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Speaking of which, let's hear another one. You got another one?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I do. It's another spring poem with an interesting title, Black Cap Chickadees and Homemade Pasta.
It's food again.
Black Cap Chickadees and Homemade Pasta. As chickadees fling themselves from bare-budded branch, I mound 2 cups of flour on the counter, make nest for 3 eggs. Mm. First work the dough with fork, then hands find the right consistency. Mm. A tablespoon of added water. Chickadees read the arrival of spring with acrobats. I sense the readiness of dough through fingers as mason bees emerge from white straws. I remember my grandmother at her table, flour up to her elbows, grandfather grumbling something about boiled potatoes. The years somersault by, our list of desires grows smaller. A gas-fired stove, a garden of cobbled stone, our arms still reaching for each other.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, thank you.
Just knockout ending, you know.
Yes,
the
so
ending
often.
Is really important.
Yeah.
Like a gymnast, you just got to stick it. But more elegant. Not that gymnasts aren't elegant.
That's true. They're stiff.
Can I just say, Linda Paston, a wonderful poet, dead now, died at 90. Her work is accessible. The last collection is called Almost an Elegy. The collection I like the best is called The Last Uncle. Linda Paston, P-A-S-T-A-N.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Did you know her?
No, I never got a chance to study with her, but I have friends who studied with her and said, yeah, boy, she was good. Mm. She was good.
And say the name of her books again, please.
The Last Uncle.
Okay.
That's one. And the other one is Almost an Elegy.
Mm.
If you're just going to get one, get that. It's in the King County Library system.
Okay.
And it includes The Last Uncle. And The Last Uncle is a wonderful collection. And the poem, The Last Uncle, is a knockout poem.
Is it?
Mm. Yeah. I have another.
I would
short
love
poem
to hear another one.
I would like to read.
Rustling papers.
Summer solstice at 72. I have waltzed away from romance and entered an unorthodox holy order. Now I judge likely and unlikely, avoid discussions that cannot move, read the news, weed the beets, walk humbly under cedars, refreshed by solitude like a lone bee in a petal bell. June and the longest day. Afternoon rain on the sweet peas. Tomorrow the darkening begins and cherries ripen. The junco, whose nest in the grass I protected last summer, could be the bird who visits my porch. I could trust the changing path to this new world. Make each day true, because as I get older, I will want to remember how I enjoyed the ordinary. Measure water for rice, listen to the sputtering of chicken, carrot, and onion braised in a clay pot, the house fragrant and safe with supper. Yesterday I wrote an honest poem, but perhaps not today. Those lies I tell myself. If I saw my past as gentler, would it make the future easier? I am the widow of no husband. See how light falls on the hazel tree, gilding each trembling leaf.
Wow.
How the light gilds each leaf. That's
beautiful.
So
thank you for
that. There's another visual.
That's beautiful. Yeah, and again, it's like how, I don't understand how you can move these words from different topics, like this is food and divorce and birds and all kinds of things, and make it into such a succinct and beautiful story. It's lovely.
I don't either.
So when you're writing a poem, are you typists, or do you use longhand?
I used to use longhand, but actually my hands don't work as well as they used to. So now I do type directly. Yeah.
And do you find that when you're writing these poems, does it just flow out of you and then you go back and
it flows out?
Yeah.
That's how mine come. They flow out.
How about you?
I write every day in a journal. I write a bad poem every morning. I cover up what was written before. I don't want to see it. I write longhand. Mm-hmm. And then after a couple of months, I go back and I type in the ones that I think are useful. Except this summer, I wanted to be in this anthology, I Sing the Salmon Home. So I sat down in cold blood and I thought about salmon. And I just, at the computer, and I just wrote and wrote and wrote. And then the next day, I got up and I did the same thing. So I had a lot of material. I had two poems. I mashed them together. I took out what was useless, and then I set it aside and didn't look at it for a week.
Wow.
That's amazing.
And did you change it after that week?
What?
Did you edit it more after that week?
Oh, yeah. Each poem goes through hundreds of drafts. Mm. Yeah.
And do you feel like, I know having been a published writer, when I see things published with my name, I'm kind of like, oh, man, that could have been so much better.
Oh, yes.
Do you do that too? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's really that self-critic, that editor that sits on your shoulder.
Embarrassment seeing your name out there. It's a little scary.
If you're not really proud of the work. Yeah. Yeah.
Lanera, I don't see you agreeing with that.
Well, what? Tell
what
us.
What do you think about that?
I don't let anything be seen by the light of day until I'm really comfortable with it. I didn't publish for a long time, and so I don't have anything out there that I'm embarrassed about. That doesn't mean that I don't revise.
Yeah.
But, and I'm deeply, profoundly insecure. But as I can't think of a writer who isn't.
Right. That's really true.
I am a writer and I am there with you.
Yeah.
And what I'm finding, I don't write poetry, I write essays. And what I'm finding is that the more genuine I want to be, the more truthful I want to be, the more difficult it is to expose myself.
It's vulnerability.
It's very much so.
And I think poets have huge vulnerability.
Oh, this book that's coming out. It's one thing to look at it, but Answering Chaos, a Handbook, it's in an introduction in seven sections. And the sections are how to survive childhood, how to marry and divorce, how to resist. Things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are more abstract ones, how to respect waters, because I have a lot of writing about, I mean, I live on an island, I grew up on an island, I grew up on the water, blah, blah, blah. I'm really interested in water. But it has occurred to me that it's a little unnerving. However, Kelly Russell Agadon, who is one of my mentors, said that she wrote a collection published that's very forthright. And she saw it on a friend's table and realized the book had never been opened. So it's really pretty safe because only other poets are going to be reading it. And when I realized that, I went,
Oh. You know, yeah, there's a lot of, as a journalist, I realized early on that my writing would soon be at the bottom of the birdcage. Mm. So, who cares? Mm. We only have 5 minutes left.
And oh, no.
Our poet laureate, Sandra Noel, is notably absent today. Oh, she had something else to do. And I wanted to read the title poem from her latest book, Unraveling the Endless Knot. Would that be okay?
Sure.
It's not too
sure.
Great.
Sulawesi flying foxes are returning to the forest in a river of night sky, following the scent of eucalyptus and banksias on the warm winds blowing seaward toward their island reclaimed, at least for the time being, because a man is paid to put away his cruel snares, but next year may be different. This year, coho salmon are returning to a small restored stream near Seattle, renewing their natal journey broken for 100 years. Yet somehow they return again, following a genetic map of scent to source from 1,000 miles of ocean, silver to red fire up a river and home again. Mm. At least this year, because a company is paid to leave its land undeveloped, but next year or the next may be different. Thank you, Sandra.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you, Sandra. Poets. And, Madam
yes, ma'am.
Host,
what?
Can we go out with a little more
Harry Belafonte? Yes. Yes, I just have a couple more things to say, as usual.
Right.
We
of
have
course.
4 minutes left.
Right, we do.
I really thank both of you for coming. It's just, it's, I didn't get enough information. You know, it's like we could continue talking like this for hours. And I really appreciate that you came and spent time with us and
thank
shared
you.
Your work. It's
thank
beautiful
you.
Work.
Oh, thank you.
And are you doing readings around town? Is there anywhere I can hear you read? Or are you doing anything like that in the near future? Well, if you do, let us know. You have our emails. Let us know and we can come. And I also would think that at some point in the future, it would be really fun to really delve into process and inspiration and the kinds of things that we look at every day that we may not think about as poetry.
Wonderful.
I think we'd like to do that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a cool idea.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right.
Later in the season. Thank you, Margaret. Lanera.
Thank
you.
Good.
It's a beautiful name. And
thank you for listening, everybody.
Thank you for listening. And, you know, let's pay a little homage to our friend Harry
and
Belafonte.
And I'm going to hit this button. I really don't know what we're going to get.
Down the way where the nights are gay and the sun shines daily on the mountain top. I took a trip on a sailing ship, and when I reached Jamaica, I made a stop. But I'm sad to say I'm on my way. Won't be back for many a day. My heart is down, my head is turning around. I had to leave a little girl in Kingston town. Sad to say, I'm on my way. Won't be back for many a day. My heart is down, my head is turning around. I had to leave a little girl in Kingston town. Down at the market, you can hear ladies cry out while on their head they bear. Ackee rice, salt fish are nice and the rum is fine any time of year. But I'm sad to say I'm on my way. Won't be back for many a day. My heart is down, my head is turning around. Had to leave a little girl in Kingston town. Sad to say I'm on my way. Won't be back for many a day. My heart is down, my head is turning around. Had to leave a little girl in Kingston town.